Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap in running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I'm your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, today we're going to share a fictitious story, but it's really just a conglomeration of the thousands of stories that we've heard throughout the years. You are going to enjoy it, I'm sure. And then, do you have any idea what it's like to be a newborn giraffe? And what does a newborn giraffe have to do with their fitness journey? Well, you're going to find out today. And of course, joining me for those things and much more is Upward Running Director and all-around good guy, Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. How's your week been?
We've had VBS this week. Yeah. And so
you're
that's
worn out.
I am, but it's, you know, it's always a good worn out.
Yeah.
I mean, watching those kids, I'm going to tell a little story about one of the kids, and it's just fantastic. Just some of these stories are just, I just love kids and watching them be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was down in Mexico Beach last week. Not to be confused with the country of Mexico. It's just in the panhandle of Florida. It's where my in-laws live. And Dean, I learned something about rucking. You know, I've been rucking quite a bit.
Right.
Rucking, the longer you go, it's kind of like compound interest. The pain compounds.
I've not gone over 3 miles.
Okay. So, and I've gone four. But I decided I was going to do something longer. I didn't know what I was going to do. So Holly and I took off. It was mid-morning, so it was already pushing 90 degrees down there. And we got to 3 miles, and I said, you know, I feel pretty good. The thing I talk about rucking is, you know, it's more of a discomfort thing.
Yeah.
Your legs feel okay, but your shoulders, you just start getting. And so by like 2.9 miles, my body's like, okay, you're about to get this thing off.
Yeah.
Well, we went out a little over 3.5, so we were going to have to come back. And so I told Holly on the way back, I said, you know, I said, my legs are fine, but my shoulders, the discomfort is just weird. I mean, it's just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so fast forward another maybe half a mile, and I said, my legs are still fine, but my shoulders are about an 8 or 9 right now. I said, it's just getting really uncomfortable because I don't have the shoulder strength.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a big guy. I don't have the broad shoulders.
I'm with you.
And so fast forward another mile, probably about to mile 5, everything was screaming. My legs were screaming. My shoulders were screaming. It was 94 degrees by this time.
Yeah.
And your mind starts playing all the tricks of, okay, how can I get out of this? Can I just lay this back down, finish, come back? I finished at a swimming pool, which was like
good timing,
like walking into the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
But it was so weird how running, walking, none of those do that.
No.
But it's like it compounds really quickly. So
yeah.
I don't know. I did 7.6 miles.
Man.
And it was hard. It was really hard.
When I get back to it, I'll have to try that. My knee is still, it's a lot better.
Yeah.
It's almost 100%. And once it gets back to 100%, I plan to get back to it and do it two or three times a week at least.
Well, so. Of course, when I got to the pool, I took my shirt off to get in the pool. And Holly said, she said, you look like you're still wearing your rucksack.
Yeah. Because
the straps over my shoulder, everything was red where that pack was.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, it is the dog days of summer. Do you know where that phrase comes from?
No.
The dog days of summer. So I looked it up because I'm like, I thought about that and I thought, what does that mean? Well, here's what it means. There's a star, Sirius. Everybody's heard of the star Sirius.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also known as the dog star. And then there's a constellation, Canis Major, which is also called the Greater Dog Constellation.
Mm.
And it's in the Northern Hemisphere. And apparently during this time of the year, those things rise with the sun. So those stars come up with the sun. And so that's why they call it the dog days of summer. I had no idea. Now, just to be clear, we're not into astronomy or anything like that, but I just wondered why it was, and that's why it is.
I just always assumed it was because this time of year, that's when you see the dogs laying under shade trees with their tongues hanging out.
That's what I thought, but we were wrong.
T- to me, that makes more sense.
Well, but, I kind of like being wrong and learning something new.
I don't like being wrong, but I like learning new things.
Well, our post of the week comes from Catherine Hardison Powell. She said, "You never know what you're going to run into on your morning mileage in rural northeast Georgia. So my running buddies and I were up early this morning before the heat, and this beautiful white chicken must have escaped off the farm truck. Immediately, I wanted to rescue it. I don't like animals getting in the road. After some time of trying to get the chicken to safety, we continued our run. And then, as we passed the local Dollar General, some good distance down the road, we got a friendly greeting from Mr. Rooster. As I was reflecting back over the white chicken, I was thinking about the word rescue. I came home and found these verses in Psalm 18. This is the New Living Translation. He reached down from heaven and rescued me. He drew me out of the deep waters. He rescued me from my powerful enemies, from those who hated me and were too strong for me. They attacked me at a moment when I was in distress, but the Lord supported me, and he led me to a place of safety. He rescued me because he delights in me. I'm not sure of the demise of this chicken, but I'm so grateful for every time Father God has rescued me from sin, trouble, and most of all for eternity. Today, as you run and shine his light, remember we are all rescued for a purpose to help others meet the one, Jesus, who rescued us. Happy Tuesday."
Hmm. What a great post.
The first thing I thought when I saw that was, man, she's having a foul day. Bad dad joke. Yeah, this is a really good post.
You know what's the great thing about Scripture is, though? The more you get into it, the more we see it paralleled in our life, in our fitness, true, in our community. And it's a pretty cool thing when you see something. And I do this, the more I go on in life, the more I read in Scripture, I find myself doing this more. But you see something, you experience something, or you say something, and you think, you know, that reminds me of this verse of Scripture. And that's just cool because when you really start doing that, you really start realizing just how many things Scripture speaks to.
Yeah.
That really weren't even, these things weren't even there back when Scripture was written,
mm-hmm,
but they're still speaking to new things even today. And that's, I mean, we call it the living word, but that is truly where it comes to life, is because the word doesn't evolve, but the applications that it's being used to, there's constantly new ones as new things come up.
In today's terms, you would say that the Bible has aged well, right?
You think about
so many things that came out 100 years ago, and today you look at it and you're like, oh my goodness,
that did not age well. A politician said something 5 years ago, and you're like, that didn't age well.
Right.
And but you never say that about Scripture.
Nope,
ever.
Ever, because that's never true.
Sure.
Absolutely. That's good stuff, yeah. Our run of the week comes from some guy named Dean Thompson. He wrote this: "My running partner for this morning was this young man, Jair. Great guy. First 10K, and he crushed it at the Hawkins fundraiser 10K to benefit Row 12 Ministries. He ran 47 minutes. Nice job, Jair." Hmm. So, young guy. Last week, we talked about the largest 10K in the world, mm-hmm, the Peachtree Road Race. And today, we're talking about maybe the coziest 10K in the world, the Hawkins 10K. I was exactly three times this guy's age.
Wow.
So it was, but you know, that's what's so great about running is I felt like he and I had a connection,
sure,
still, even though I'm old enough to be his grandfather. You know, he was just a good guy.
Yeah.
And he did really well. I mean, 47 minutes, first time. He'd never run. I don't think he'd run. Well, he's a soccer player, so he's fit.
Yeah.
But there were several guys there from that I think Patrick had some kind of a relationship to, working-wise.
Sure.
And several of them were running their first 5K. They had never run more than 3 miles or 5K in the past. And so.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they all did really well.
We were on vacation. We weren't able to be there, but it sounds like y'all had a great time.
As always. Yeah. And of course, it benefited Row 12 Ministries, Rebecca, sure, McGeorge and her husband. it sounds like things are going really well for them.
Right.
Got a chance to talk to them a little bit. And but just so you know, they can always use more resources.
Sure.
So if you go and Google row 12, but Google space, R-O space, the word 12.
Right.
And it'll come up. If you Google it together, it doesn't come up. So just,
oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So just so you know, if you want to go in there and help them out. Our trivia question from last week, who was the first woman to break 2 minutes in the 800? The first woman to break 2 minutes in the 800 was a lady by the name of Hildegard Falk of West Germany, way back in July 11th, 1971. It was during the German championships in Stuttgart. She ran 158.45, which incidentally is interesting that time because I believe that the first time that I broke 2 minutes in the 800 when I was in high school, I want to say this was right. If it wasn't exactly my time, it was really close.
Really?
Yeah. And this just shattered the old world record by over 2 seconds. And to give you an idea on how far we've come, this 158.45 was incredibly fast at the time. But last year for the Paris Olympics, the Olympic standard was 159.3. So you couldn't even be considered for the Olympics unless you ran less than a second slower than this lady did when she set the world record back then. And so, and there were 48 women who qualified to run in the Olympics. There were 2 years ago, there were 66 women who broke 2 minutes in the half mile. And so, yeah, so that they've gotten a lot faster. The world record has only been broken 6 times since this record. But interestingly, it still hasn't been broken in over 40 years.
Wow.
Jarmila Kratochvílová from Czechoslovakia ran 153.28 back in 1983. And there's only been two athletes that have even come within 1 second of, excuse me, yeah, 1 second of that record since then. So it's an incredible record. Needless to say, there are rumors.
I was going to say, is there any controversy surrounding
there are
that?
Lots. Yeah. If you saw her, you'd see the controversy.
Yeah.
Just looking at her. Right. She didn't look like a typical runner.
Right.
Because she also held the world record for a short time in the 400 meters. Mm. And so, there's some questions about all of that. But if women are approaching the 4 minute mile, as we've been talking about mm-hmm. more recently, you got to be in 153 shape to run a sub 4 minute mile. And so, surely it's coming soon, I would hope.
I saw a what's the lady's name that did the Nike thing just a few weeks ago, trying to break the 4 minute mile.
Kip Yegan.
Yeah. I saw a commercial last night. They're making that into a Netflix documentary.
Oh, cool.
Where she tried to break it. I saw them. They were advertising it last night.
Very good.
Maybe it wasn't Netflix. Maybe it was Prime. But one of them, they're making a documentary on that. And it was neat to see that on TV.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
I just love Faith Kip Yegan. She's such, you know, when she got through with that attempt and when she has won other championships, the number of people who come out of the woodwork to go hug her and congratulate her.
Sure.
There's a lot of respect for that woman.
Yeah.
And so that it's always good to see.
Yeah, for sure.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
So Dean, I've been on this health food, cholesterol. It's turned into all kind of things. But this journey I've been on since December. And I'm continuing on that, but it's like God's putting all these little milestones around me. Maybe I'm just more sensitive to it now, but Holly and I, as I mentioned in the previous segment, went on vacation last week. I think this was one of our first vacations without kids, going to a place that we would normally take kids, being my in-law's place.
Yeah.
So that was kind of neat. But on the way down there, there's this little place in Bluffton, Georgia. Bluffton is population 106, I think. I mean, it is like a speck on the map.
Yeah.
But I love going the back way down to Mexico Beach and Port St. Joe. And there's this little farm. It's kind of off the four lane. You just happen to see the sign and you can turn down this little side road. And they've got a little, like a little general store. They cook food. And so I just like going there. I love the atmosphere of it. And we've been going there for years. And so on the way down, they've always had this farm tour. Didn't know a whole lot about the farm. I've seen the old man in there that owns the farm before. But they have tours on Saturday mornings at 11 o'clock. So that's when we were going to be coming home. Holly said, we should take the farm tour.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't know if the timing was going to be right and all that. So fast forward to Saturday, we're coming home. We stopped there to get an early lunch and we're there at 10:30. And I said, well, let's go ahead and do the farm tour. So the daughter of Will Harris, the guy's name is Will Harris that owns this farm. She's hosting the tour. I think there's probably six or eight of us doing the tour. And I'm thinking this is just a little farm and I don't know a whole lot about it. So we start going on this farm tour and I start realizing we're kind of the guy that owns this, the guy that I see sitting out in the rocking chair at the store.
Yeah.
Is kind of a legend.
Wow.
So this farm, number one, is 3,000 acres.
Wow.
I thought this was some little 100 acre farm.
Yeah.
But it's a 3,000 acre cattle farm. But where this story gets interesting and where it ties into my journey that I've been on for a while is he is kind of the pioneer, this White Oaks Pastures. You can look it up. And Will Harris is the farmer's name. He was kind of the pioneer of the regenerative movement.
Yeah.
Not in that type of farming, but going from big corporate farming back to regenerative farming. Regenerative simply means they're not bringing things in like feed. Their cows are fully, pasture, grass-fed, grass-finished. Those cows are never eating feed. And they're not bringing in fertilizers because the cows are fertilizing. They're not bringing in pesticides, insecticides, fungicides, any of this stuff. They're letting the farm work as a farm worked
100 years ago.
Here you go. Novel idea, right?
Yeah.
But this is where it gets interesting. So we're doing this tour, and the daughter starts talking about her dad being on Joe Rogan.
That's crazy.
And I'm like, this guy, I sat and talked to this guy. He does not seem like a Joe Rogan type. This is your, when you think of 70-something-year-old cowboy, this is the guy you picture.
Yeah.
Cowboy hat kind of on crooked, old worn-out button down. Sitting in a rocking chair, reading a newspaper.
Yeah.
And so, but he back 20 years ago, 25 years ago, he made the conscious decision that he didn't like, he was fourth generation. And this was a huge corporate farming, feedlots, all the things that you hear bad about farming. This was that. And he made a huge risk to take it back to the way it's supposed to be, regenerative, which is the healthiest way. And we won't go into all those things. But I don't know. It was just a cool guy. So I'm not a Rogan fan. I mean, I've listened to some of them when there's somebody on there that I want to hear. Will doesn't have the best language, but it's fascinating. If you want to learn anything about the regenerative farming without the political side of it. Yeah. Because that's where it gets a little sticky, is so much of this stuff has political motives attached to it. Mm. And that's why I don't like it. I agree with so much of that movement, but I'm kind of turned off because it gets so political. If you want to hear the nuts and bolts of what is going on with our farming today and why it is not healthy today, and you want to hear from somebody that's kind of took a big risk a lot of money to go back to the old way, give this guy a listen. Just Google Joe Rogan, Will Harris. You can look at White Oak Pastures online. But I had no idea. We've been going there for years, and
that's pretty cool.
This old man sitting in that rocking chair is just like a rock star in that world.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I love meeting people like that. I met a guy on vacation last week that was walking across America.
Yeah.
And I got to walk with him for a few miles, and there's more to come on that. We're going to try to get him on the podcast. I haven't even told you that, but he's willing. He would love to come on the podcast.
Yeah.
Just slow down. Look around.
Yeah.
There are cool people all around us that if we just stick to the busyness of life, we just walk right by them. So I don't know. That was my vacation. Met two really cool people.
Pretty cool story. Well, that's a cool story. Let's talk about a couple of sad stories here. Fauja Singh, we talked about him on the podcast not too long ago. We've talked about him more than once, actually.
Yeah.
And he's the oldest man to ever have completed a marathon. He was 100 years old when he completed the Toronto Waterfront Marathon. And we don't know his exact birth date, so that's his word about how old he is. But recently he was out for a walk, got hit by a car, and died.
Wow.
Gosh, you just don't know. But always be defensive when you're out there. Of course, when you're 114, which is what he says he was now, it's kind of hard to be reactive. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's kind of hard to jump out of the way at that point. So that was kind of sad. I don't know any other details about how it happened or whatever, but there's death threats for the person who did it. And that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the guy's a legend. Everybody loves him and all of that. But, I mean, I'm 100% positive they didn't do it on purpose.
But, you know, to kind of look at the positive side of it, if there is a positive, man, he died what he loved doing.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, I've always said I hope when I go it's quick and I'm on my lawnmower.
Yeah.
But, that's sad. That really is. Talk about legends.
Yeah.
He's a legend.
Yep. And it may be even sadder. Caitlin Dollar, apparently she's the fastest high school girl in Georgia history. She won several state championships. She was a freshman at Florida State last year. And the headline says she lost her battle with anxiety and depression. Apparently, she committed suicide. I didn't bring this up to be morbid or anything like that. But to your point about looking around, not only look around for those people that may be around you that may be extraordinary people, but there's also people around you that you don't even... This girl looked like she had everything going for her. All these championships. She was in college. She, you know, all of these things that she had going. And in the back of her mind, she's got all these horrible things going on that caused her to think about life and herself in ways that were just not good. And I wonder how many people knew about it.
Sure.
You know? And so if you got people around you that don't seem quite all together and there and where they need to be, it may be good to have some conversations. Not ask them, you know, do you plan on committing suicide?
Right.
But, you know, a lot of times there's warning signs that we find out about later that we kind of ignored. And so.
Well, and the flip side of that coin, if that's you, get people around you.
Yes.
You know, I don't think I've ever been to that degree, but we've been in low places.
Yeah.
And I understand what the devil's telling you in those times. It's nobody cares. Nobody wants to hear what you have to say. You're the only one dealing with this. You just need to keep quiet. And those are lies from the pit of hell.
That's right.
If that is you and you're struggling with anything, get people around you and talk about it. Because talking, I just wrote about this. I was working on a study. Talking allows you to take that weight and allow other people to hold it with you. It doesn't take the weight away. The weight is still hanging there, but you got other people helping you hold that up. Yep. And that's so important, especially with stories like this. And sadly, we hear more and more stories like this that we believe those lies, that yeah. nobody cares, nobody wants to hear it, and you're the only one dealing with it, and you need to be ashamed of it. Don't be.
Yes.
Don't be.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know how many times, you know, I thought about the song from Third Day, I Need a Miracle.
Right.
It's about a guy who's about, he's going to go commit suicide because his whole life seems to be falling apart. And at the end of the song is basically he heard this song that lifted him up and made him think more positively about life, and he decided not to do it. And to, and we hear that all the time about somebody who was, they were about to do something bad, and then somebody came by and said the right thing at the right moment. Surely God led, and they didn't.
It's that modern day It's a Wonderful Life story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yep. Well, our story this week is a fictitious one. But it sounds so much like a generic upward running story. So I hope you enjoy this story of Marcus. It's called Running by Faith, the story of Marcus. Marcus had never thought of himself as a runner. In his youth, he preferred quiet evenings with a book over the pounding rhythm of feet on pavement. But as he entered his 30s, Marcus felt a growing restlessness, both in his body and his spirit. He noticed his energy waning, his mood dipping, and a sense of distance creeping into his relationship with God. One evening, after a particularly long day, Marcus found himself lacing up a pair of old sneakers and stepping out into the cool dusk. At first, the running was awkward and exhausting. His lungs burned and his legs felt heavy. But Marcus remembered a sermon he had heard about perseverance and faith, how sometimes the journey matters more than the destination. He decided to approach running not just as exercise, but as a spiritual discipline. Each morning before the world awoke, Marcus ran the quiet streets using time to pray, reflect, and listen for God's voice. As the weeks passed, Marcus noticed changes. Physically, he grew stronger. His breath eased, his stride lengthened, and his body felt more alive. Spiritually, the transformation was even more profound. The steady rhythm of running became a form of meditation, a way to silence the noise of daily life and focus on God. He began to see parallels between his runs and his faith journey. Both required discipline, trust, and a willingness to keep moving forward, even when the path was hard. On difficult days, Marcus remembered the words from Hebrews, "Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." He found comfort in knowing that faith, like running, was not about perfection, but persistence. Some mornings, he felt God's presence in the sunrise or the gentle breeze. Other days, he ran through doubt and fatigue, trusting that each step mattered, even when he couldn't see the finish line. Marcus's new routine began to ripple outward. Friends and colleagues noticed his renewed energy and positivity. When asked about his secret, Marcus shared how running had become a spiritual practice, a way to care for both body and soul. He started a small running group at his church, inviting others to join him in running and prayer. Together, they discovered the joy of community and the power of supporting one another, both on the road and in their spiritual lives. Over time, Marcus realized that running had become more than a hobby. It was a metaphor for his walk with God. There were hills and valleys, moments of exhilaration, and times of struggle. But through it all, Marcus learned to trust the process, to lean on his faith, and to keep moving forward one step at a time.
It's a great story.
It is the story of many people. I mean, how many times have we heard this story?
Right.
With maybe a couple of little details different,
sure.
But the same.
Different names, different circumstances, yep. But the same sentiment. Yeah.
Yep. And so many times we've heard stories of people who were changed in an instant, like they had this sudden realization, you know, but then we've also heard these stories where it's just this slow change of how somebody makes this connection between their running and their faith. And over time, they see more and more of the parallels and all the things that go along. And
yeah. And I'm convinced that the reason that is, I mean, I'm not claiming to get into the mind of Jesus, but I'm convinced, at least in my life, the reason it's that way is because, you know, I've said before that if in in January of 2010, God would have said, "Hey, Mitchell, I want you to start teaching a running class. I want you to write a book. I want you and your wife to quit your jobs. I want you to go into full-time ministry, and I want you to begin speaking to people. And then later on, I want you to partner up with this running guy and start this podcast and ultimately be where you are today." I would have said, "No, thank you."
Yeah.
It would have scared me to death.
Mm-hmm.
But God started with, "Get 12 t-shirts made."
Yep.
And I think that's for our good. So many times we get impatient, but in reality, if we saw the big picture, if I saw the big picture of where I'm going to be in 20 years, if I saw that today, it would probably scare me to death even today.
Yeah.
True. And I think that's why God moves at a slow pace often. Now, sometimes he moves fast. Maybe it's because he needs to get our attention with something. But more times than not, it's a slow creep.
Yeah, yeah. James 1, 2 through 4. I've heard this one before. "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." Of course, this verse is going to come up again in Dean's thoughts, but the idea is that when we test our faith, it makes us stronger. It's the same thing that happens when we go out and we run or we walk. We go out and to check off a workout, but we come home a little bit stronger, just a little bit, than we were the day before. And we do that time after time, and then after a while, we realize we've made this great progress. I couldn't help but think about you ever heard the comedian Stephen Wright? Really dry sense of humor. Cracks me up. Anyway, he said he was working on telekinesis. And so every day he would come home and he would stare at this rug in his house trying to get it to move. He did this every day for like 2 years and the rug never moved. But his house was gone. The point being that a lot of times we're focused so hard on one thing and doing this one thing when all these other things around us are changing and we're not paying any attention. Right. We focus on trying to get ourselves more fit, whether it's spiritually or physical. A lot of times we may not feel like it's like the 5K challenge folks. They think that running hasn't become easier by the time they get to week 8.
Right.
But when you point out, yeah, but in week 1, remember how hard it was to run for 1 minute? They go, "Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it has gotten easier."
1 minute's got easier.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times we don't recognize that.
Yeah.
And we need to recognize it.
Well, the whole idea is to start. It's funny, Dean, how we go through these cycles of subject matter. You know, I did the devotion for Upward the other morning, and it was about doing hard things. You did the devotion here a while back, and it was about doing hard things. And then today, lo and behold, we're in James 1, which is talking about suffering through hard things. But at the end of the day, what I would want to encourage somebody listening, and at the risk of sounding like Nike, just do it.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, start that nutrition journey, start that training plan, start that Bible in a year, start that writing project, whatever it is that God's laying on your heart, just start it. Don't run out 2 years and think, "Oh, I could be there and that's going to be way too..." No, don't do that. Start. We've talked about streetlights before. If God flips on a streetlight, go there. Don't worry about all those fictitious streetlights that may or may not be out there in the darkness. Go to where he lights up and work right there.
Yep.
And that is... Talk about, you know, I don't like the phrases living in the moment and all those different kind of cliches, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Find where God is working. I talked about this in something I wrote the other day about David Hendricks.
Mm-hmm.
He was famous for saying, "I want to find where God is working and I want to go there until he shows me something else." And it's really that simple. We complicate this process way too many times, but it's that simple.
Yep. And the point is that when things come up that get you a little off of that track, maybe something comes up that you've got to go around to get to that streetlight. Don't fret about it.
Right.
God put those there and they're meant for a purpose.
It's a simple hurdle is all it is. Yeah.
Yep. Romans 5, 3 through 5. Not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. And hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. You brought this up last week, the whole idea of people suffering together. And when we do that, we form this special bond when we suffer together.
Yeah, that's not my saying. That's Dave Jones, our marketing guy. He makes the comment, there's a special bond between people when they suffer together.
Yeah. And it's so true. It's very true. But when it comes to personal suffering, we get it, like you've said before, mm-hmm. we get it when it comes to training.
Sure.
But when it just comes to personal suffering, it's a lot harder to accept, isn't it?
Sure.
But I think about it in the context of the way I react to things. For example, I'll hear something that I think is not a good thing, and I can feel the blood pressure. I can feel the blood rush to my head. I can feel myself going, you know, I just get anxious really quickly because somebody said something that's inflammatory and I want to respond to it. But we know that an instant response to that is probably not the best thing. Well, how do I condition myself to get to the point where I don't respond to those things in a negative way instantly? Mm-hmm. Well, I do that by going through those things over and over again and hearing those inflammatory things and not responding to them. And the more I do that, the easier it gets to not respond to those things. And we need practice at these things we don't like in order to get better at how we handle them.
Yeah, I don't know if this analogy is a good one, but you know, I think about I've seen these statistics on people who win the lottery and that they're bankrupt in a matter of years. And it's because that muscle, that tendency to handle money was never built. They went from maybe a modest lifestyle to an extravagant lifestyle overnight, and they didn't know how to handle that. And it's kind of the same thing when it's kind of the same thing when we pray for patience. Mm. What does God not give us? He doesn't give us patience. He gives us the opportunity to exercise patience.
Yep.
He gives us the opportunity to exercise that muscle, because to get that thing without the work that goes into it, that thing is just going to be fleeting. I mean, the first thing that comes up, patience are going to be gone.
Yep.
But when we learn, and this is where God is masterful, is he doesn't hand us that lottery. He hands us a buck at a time.
Yeah.
And we learn how to handle that, to manage that, to steward that before we go to the next step. It's the process that we talked about just a few minutes ago, the process of doing something to get to that end goal is always more beneficial and better for us than having whatever that is. It's always the process. Yep. You know, it's why I love people who talk about they don't have goals in fitness or in life. They have process goals. Mm-hmm. It's always more sustainable doing it that way.
That's right. That's right. 2 Corinthians 12:9. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. This is where sometimes I feel really guilty, because as I was talking about before, responding to things that I feel like are inflammatory in a negative and instant way. To me, when I do that, I am acting like God's not in control. It's as if in that moment, I have to respond because I have to do something about it. Mm-hmm. But if I really deep down believe that God is in control, I'm not going to look at that as an attack, or as I may be saddened by whatever it is that is said because I feel bad for the person or whatever it is that's being said. But I won't be worked up about it in that way that you feel it in your gut, because I'll know God's in control. Mm-hmm. And if I know that, then why should I fret over those things? I shouldn't. Now, I should be concerned over them, sure. If somebody says something anti-biblical, my response shouldn't just be, well, just let it go. Sometimes you need to respond to those things, but it should be in a calm and authoritative way, mm-hmm. in a way that you know God's in control. And when you do that, people see that, mm-hmm. and it has a big impact.
When you say that, it leads right into, I've read this verse, I don't know how many times, and we've talked about this all the time. Sometimes that we just take it, and God just takes us in a completely different direction. So I think I've talked about on here, you know, I do my quiet time now in it's actually a deer stand, but it's got a roof on it, but I just got to where I couldn't, it was too many distractions sitting right here. And so I go down to my deer stand every morning, no phone, just paper and a Bible. And so this morning when I read this, I'm going to put this picture up here because this picture is taken from a trail camera, but I'm sitting about 40 yards to the left of this picture. And so there were some turkeys out in front of me. When I was reading this, there were three hens and four baby chicks. So you can see one, two, three hens, and then the four baby chicks.
Yeah.
It's chick season around here. So there's baby deer and there's baby turkeys everywhere. But as I read this verse and I looked up at that picture, this verse took a completely left turn for me in that this verse to me today is telling us we need to understand our place. And what hit me was these turkeys right here, they're pecking. You know, turkeys, chickens, they peck. Mm-hmm. And what they're pecking for is worms and grubs and whatever else in the ground. And those worms and those grubs, they have no threats. They have nobody above them until the turkeys show up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the turkeys show up, they react and they start trying to go down on the ground. In the same way, the turkeys right then, they're king of the mountain right there, right?
Right.
They're pecking those worms, those grubs, they're king of the mountain, but they know their place. Because the minute a coyote walks into that field,
mm-hmm.
the script flips.
Yep.
All of a sudden, they better start scurrying or they're going to get eaten. In the same way, that coyote's in the field and a bear walks in. All of a sudden, the bear's not top of the totem pole anymore. Mm-hmm. They better scurry. And the same way, if those bears are in the field and a lion walks in, we don't have lions around here, but if one did,
yeah,
walked in, guess what? They better run. They better scurry. And even when the bear is in the field, I mean, even when the lion is in the field, which is the king of the jungle, right?
Yep.
If a bolt of lightning and a clap of thunder happens, guess what's happening to that lion? It's running for cover.
Yep.
And what this showed me is, this verse is saying to me in this moment is, we need to understand that God's grace is sufficient for us. And we can be proud of that. We can take pride in that. We can take comfort in that. But we need to understand our place. We need to understand our weakness. Because the moment that turkey becomes cocky and thinks that it's the king of that field, what's going to happen? It's going to get eaten by that coyote.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we get so many times. We think, if I've got God, who can be against me? And we start to poke our chest out and we start to think we're in control.
Yeah.
And it's about that time where we get taken out so many times. And so, wow. I don't know, there was a whole Bible verse came out of me sitting there watching, what is that,
seven
turkeys, and reading this verse. It's like God just brought those two things together.
Isn't that awesome?
I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but that's what he was saying to me this morning.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Question. In what ways can physical disciplines like running become spiritual practices in your own life? Of course, this is what we do all the time. I think it's easy as just connecting the parallels between faith and running and endurance and walking and all of those things. Because I think it's easy to see those things. Once you do both, then you can see them. And even more than that, the Bible does tell us to take care of our bodies. And I feel like so many people neglect that part of the Bible. Mm-hmm. So many people just look right over that. And I'll even go so far as to say this, and this could be upsetting to some people, but it drives me crazy to see somebody who is, they're so worried about what their hair looks like, for example, but they're not concerned at all about the physical health of their body.
Sure.
And I'm not saying we shouldn't care about what we look like. That's not what I'm saying at all. But there's a priority, and our priority should be our health. And if we're really taking care of our bodies, we're concerned about our health. And that's what God commands us to do.
Yeah. The parallel there is, for me, is, and it's kind of what you just said, is running forces you to get to the heart of a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're having leg pain and you just go get some Icy Hot and rub on it, guess what you're going to have tomorrow? Leg pain.
More leg pain.
A sport like running forces you to get to the heart of the problem. In the same way that there's so many things in our world that we don't get to the heart of the problem. We treat the symptoms, not the problem. You know, if you got high cholesterol, it's probably not the cholesterol.
Yeah.
It's what you're eating. If, you know, I've been researching the whole farming and ag and all that, and it's not that the ground, it's not that our ground doesn't have a lack of fertility. It's what are we doing to the dirt? What are we spraying on it? All these things. It's oftentimes, it's consistency in our workouts. I don't know what I'm trying to say. So many times we'll focus on a workout.
Yeah.
12 by 800s. I got a buddy that's doing the Yasos. He did them yesterday. We'll get so hung up on a workout, but we neglect the fact that we're missing half of our workouts.
Mm-hmm.
Get to the root of the problem. It's the heart. It's not church attendance. So many times we say, oh, if I'm at church all the time, that's going to fix everything.
Yeah.
But the heart of the matter is the heart. So
yeah,
I think running, it, in what ways can physical disciplines become spiritual practice in our own life? It shows us that you got to get to the heart of the problem. You can't treat the symptoms of anything in life. But that's treating the symptoms is what's marketable, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's where money can be made. But many times the treatment for all these things is, it doesn't cost anything. It's just, sometimes it takes admitting to things, you know, that's really the problem.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So true. How do you respond when your spiritual journey feels difficult or exhausting? Do you press on, or are you tempted to give up?
Head down.
Yeah. That's the way to do it. Now, there are times, I'll have to admit, when things get to the point where you just don't want to deal with the fuss and the hassle and it depends on what it is. I mean, there's some things that I'm so pigheaded, I'll kill myself to get through those things. And then there's other things where I just don't care as much. And I'm just like, whatever, I just give up. You always feel bad when you get to the why bother stage. You always feel terrible when you get there. And I think about Noah in these circumstances.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Noah? He's building this boat for decades, literally decades, and nothing's happening.
Yeah.
And yet God is still persisting on telling him, keep building the boat, keep building the boat. And he keeps going, even though and people are ridiculing him. And he's going through all of this stuff, and it's like, why am I doing this?
And based on what biblical scholar you listen to, there's a good chance that the earth had never even seen rain at this point.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So what is this boat even for? He didn't even understand the concept.
Yes.
Probably.
But he kept doing it because that's what God told him to do. And that's what we're supposed to do. When we know we're on the path that God has for us It doesn't matter how hard it is. It doesn't matter how much sense it makes. We should be moving in that direction.
Man, that's good.
Who are the running partners in your faith journey? People who encourage and support you along the way. How can you be that person for someone else? One of my partners is an actual running partner. We meet every couple of weeks. We talk about the challenges of life and all the things that life throws our way, and we encourage one another. My running buddy has just found out he's got a serious illness. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to bring this up because he's telling me this story where he had a test done, and the test was a little alarming. Mm-hmm. Not terribly alarming, but a little alarming.
Sure.
And he looked at the numbers and he thought, that doesn't look good. And he went to his doctor and told his doctor, these numbers are kind of out of spec, you know, and so this doesn't look like it's good. He said, well, you know, at your age, that's not unusual. It's not a real big deal. He's like, it's out of spec. It doesn't seem like a good thing to me. Can we look at this a little bit closer?
It's outside the bell curve, Doc. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So what he does, you know, he said, okay, just for peace of mind, let's go ahead and have some tests. And they have some tests. Well, turns out he's got cancer. Mm-hmm. It's a serious illness.
Yeah.
Now, they caught it early, but they wouldn't have caught it early if the doctor had continued on the path the doctor was going to continue on. I say all that to say this. If you have concerns about your health, about the things that you see, ask questions. Mm-hmm. You know, I had some blood drawn yesterday, and there were 10 vials of blood drawn. And as I'm getting those, I'm counting the number of vials that mm-hmm. she's using, mm-hmm. because I want to make sure that she gets all 10. I don't want her to miss one and me miss one of the tests that they need to do. Well, I thought I had counted 9, and I was about to say, you're missing one. Mm-hmm. Well, then I recounted and I got 10. So there was the right number there. But my point is that I was going to speak up. I was going to say sure. something. Even if I would have looked like an idiot, I was still going to say something. But what we do with doctors, especially with healthcare, especially, is we look at healthcare and we go, they know what they're doing. Mm. And they probably do. Sure. This lady knew what she was doing. But had she only had 9,
right,
it just would have been a mistake. Mm-hmm. Everybody makes mistakes.
Sure.
So if you see medical issues, don't be afraid to speak up and ask a lot of questions, because sometimes it'll lead to good outcomes, as it did in my friend's case.
Let this story be a reminder.
Yes, yes, for sure. Do you need something to keep you motivated to keep fit, both physically and spiritually? Upward Running has what you need to keep you on track for both. Check out upwardrunning.com and join us for pennies a day. I promise you, you will not regret it. All right, we're back. And this comes from The Running Week. This Chinese company bases employee bonuses on monthly running mileage. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
A company in China has found an unusual yet intriguing method to motivate its employees, linking their annual bonuses directly to their physical fitness and exercise routines. Guangdong Dongpo Paper Company, situated in Guangdong province's bustling industrial region, has recently implemented a bonus structure based solely on physical activity rather than traditional work performance metrics. It originated with Lin Xinyang, the company's chairman, who himself is deeply passionate about fitness. So what he did was, employees who cover at least 62 miles per month earn an annual bonus worth 130% of their monthly salary. Those who manage at least 31 miles per month receive a bonus equal to their monthly salary. So that to equally measure these distances, they have this app that they use to measure their distances to make sure that they get in what they're supposed to get in. There's also a penalty if you fall short. If you run fewer than 25 miles per month, you face a significant reduction down to 60% of their potential. And then if you go less than 12 miles, then it's 30%. Now, you can walk instead of run as well. Mm. Walking is okay. So this to To motivate sustained effort, an employee who hits 31 miles for six consecutive months earned themselves a new pair of running shoes, a small yet practical perk to keep enthusiasm high. So, of course, there's been some criticisms of this, as you would expect. There's people who think this isn't fair and it's not right. And somebody said, is running 100 kilometers a month over 3,000 meters daily realistic? Are employees expected to turn into professional distance runners? Another predicted a gloomy financial outlook, noting, let's watch closely. I wouldn't be surprised if this company goes bankrupt within 5 years. So, That's kind of some of the reactions are negative. There's some positive reactions as well. But this is certainly a new and novel approach. But we've seen that people who get in a decent amount of exercise, on average, they do better.
Sure.
In so many ways. It's not absolute, but I can see why people don't like it. But at the same time, I like the idea.
Well, and it's a bonus for something. And so you don't have to do it.
Right.
But you're not entitled to the bonus either. I mean, the bonus is based on this thing. It would be like if I went out and just broadcast on social media, hey, I'm going to pay anybody who runs 100 miles next month $100. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not fair. I mean, it's what the company decided to do, and you don't have to take part. I think it's a great idea.
I've always thought about that from a bonus standpoint.
Yeah.
When I was working at a larger corporation, I remember people getting upset when bonuses went away.
Right.
At some point they went away and people got really upset about it. I'm like, it's called a bonus.
Yeah.
There's a reason why it's called a bonus.
Now it might get a little weird if it was your salary was based on it.
Yes.
But this is bonuses can be tied to anything. And you know, I still haven't researched this. I think I mentioned it on a few podcasts ago, but I think there's an index fund out there for like a mutual fund that's based on the top 100 companies. The mutual fund, the pool of funds in the pool of stocks in that mutual fund is based on the top 100 companies whose CEOs prioritizes fitness, and it outperforms the S&P almost month in and month out. And that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I still haven't researched it. I heard it on a podcast. And, you know, everything you hear on a podcast is true.
Of course, but, especially this one.
But, yeah, I mean, the whole idea that being physically active and physically fit, that the efficiencies that we gain there bleed over to every areas of our life.
Yeah, yeah. And this, how hard is it to go 3K per day?
Yeah. I mean,
it's less than 2 miles.
Right.
I know Debbie, you know, she walks every day and she gets in her 10,000 steps, which is equal to about 5 or 6 mm-hmm. miles mm-hmm. a day. And so she's got limitations.
Yeah.
Debbie has some lung issues and some other issues that mm-hmm. make it not
it's
that easy for
yeah.
her to do. And yet she does it. And if she can do it, then most people can do it. Now, I feel bad for those folks. If there's somebody at this company that truly has physical limitations that will not allow them to get out and do this, then I would feel bad for them. And I would hope that there's some kind of a replacement activity that they can do. Still something fitness-wise, but a replacement activity that they can do. I don't know whether that's the case or not, but I think that would be fair.
Yeah, and I think this would be equal to what? Trying to do the math in my head. 3,000 or 4,000 steps is what we're talking about here?
Yeah.
And so if you're not getting into 3,000 or 4,000 steps, forget the benefits. You're going to have problems.
Yes.
If that's all you're getting in a day, no matter who you are, that's going to lead to other problems.
Yep. Yep. And to get the full bonus, not the bonus plus, but the regular bonus, it's less than a mile a day.
Yeah.
It's 1,500 meters a day.
Sure.
That is just not.
You're going to do that walking to your car into the refrigerator.
Yeah. Yep. You know? Yep. Yeah. So anyway, I think this is a pretty cool idea.
Sure.
Well, it's time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, do you know what happens when a baby giraffe is born? It's a pretty traumatic start to life. This is called the newborn giraffe. The giraffe is the tallest animal on earth and is instantly recognizable by their long necks and spotted brown coats. Every child knows what a giraffe looks like, even though there are none in the wild in America. though they are known to roam nearly the entire African continent. One of the most interesting facts about giraffes is how they are born and what happens in their first moments outside the womb. The first thing that happens to a newborn giraffe is that they fall 5 or 6 feet to the ground as they exit the birth canal. That's quite an abrupt beginning to life. But the tough introduction doesn't stop there. Once the newborn is on the ground, he attempts to stand. Once able to stand on his wobbly legs, the mother kicks him gently to knock him back down. He gets back up. She knocks him back down. This happens a few times until he is strong enough to withstand a gentle kick and he can begin running. In human terms, it sounds like a terrible way to treat your baby. But why does the mother do what she does? What's her motivation? She does it to make sure that if there is a threat, the baby is ready to run away from danger. Giraffes can run up to 37 miles per hour, so they rely on their running abilities to escape potential danger. The mother is getting the baby ready as quickly as she can. Think about that in the context of our running. Sometimes it feels as if we are treating ourselves poorly when we go out for a run in the 90-degree heat or after a long day of work. But just like the baby giraffe needs a loving but painful kick, we should knock ourselves down to ensure we are stronger, or at least to keep the strength that we have built. A giraffe does it for survival. We may not do it for survival, but possessing the ability to run long distances will extend your life and lead to a better quality of life for that duration. Think about that the next time you go for a run or a walk when you don't feel like it. In the 55th Psalm, David describes what is going on around him like this. God, listen to my prayer and do not ignore my plea for help. Pay attention to me and answer me. I am restless and in turmoil with my complaint because of the enemy's voice, because of the pressures of the wicked, for they bring down disaster on me and harass me in anger. My heart shudders within me. Terrors of death sweep over me. Fear and trembling grip me. Horror has overwhelmed me. I said, if only I had wings like a dove, I would fly away and find rest. How far away would I flee? I would stay in the wilderness. I would hurry to my shelter from the raging wind and the storm. There are things going on around all of us for which we need to be ready. The evil one is not content to gently knock us over. He wants to destroy not only our ability to fight back, but the very foundation of our strength. He intends to point us away from the source of our strength. And I'm not talking about our ability to cover a 10K. Our spiritual fitness depends on us getting knocked down occasionally so we can withstand the kicks of the enemy. Can you imagine what the newborn giraffe is thinking when his mother kicks him down after the great effort it took to stand? I'm sure it's a disappointing surprise. So don't be caught off guard when you get knocked down when you least expect it, or when the run is much tougher than you expected. It is all part of the plan to make you stronger physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Man, Dane, there are so many parallels in that story. That's a great story.
We sound like a broken record.
Do hard things.
Yeah, just do hard things. But we have to connect those hard things to the reason why we do them. That's the thing. That's where we miss it sometimes. When you say do hard things, it's like, well, okay, do hard things. Well, why? Why do I do hard things? And that's the important part, is that we connect those things together.
Yeah, and don't connect not doing the hard things to something you're entitled to, or it makes you feel good. Or that's just always, I guess I'm putting my dad hat on here. There are things we need to do to our children when they're young that some would say it's tough love. You know, I listen to Dave Ramsey a lot. He said, there is no such thing as tough love. There's only love.
That's right.
And sometimes love hurts. You know, if sometimes it's take the phone from your kid.
Mm-hmm.
If they were in the middle of the road, you're going to kick them out of the road if there's a transfer truck going.
That's right.
There are times when we need to allow, not just in our kids' life, but God allows it in our lives. We need to allow it in our friends' lives. Hardship, because that little bit of hardship gives you the respect for that danger that could be limited. Going back to the turkey, you know, that there are turkeys that they have seen other turkeys get eat. Mm-hmm. It's hard to see. It's hard to watch. But guess what? It sends, what message it sends to that turkey that saw it? Don't do that.
Yep.
Don't do that.
That's right. Yep. We had a cool thing happen. We had VBS this week, as I said earlier. We had a cool thing that happened. So this little boy falls down. He's on a slide, and he falls off the slide, lands right on his face. Mm. Nose starts bleeding. It is pouring all over his face. He doesn't even realize it. He gets up. He's wiping blood all over his face. He's got it all over him. And one of the ladies...
That's an awesome mental picture.
Isn't it? And one of the ladies who was helping there, she's freaking out. His nose is bleeding. And I thought he just, you know, sometimes a kid gets a bloody nose. Sure. It just starts bleeding. Well, I didn't realize he had fallen down and hit his face and it busted his nose. But anyway, I go and I get some stuff and we get him cleaned up and everything. And just as I'm finishing cleaning this kid up, his father walks up and his father... looks at him, and the woman who's helping the kid is just, she's like, let me tell you what happened. So he fell down and he hit his face.
I know
and
you're
his
nose is bleeding. Like this dad.
And you know, she's, you can hear it in her voice. It's like, I wonder how he's going to respond. And he said, that's awesome, dude. And he says, give me some knuckles. And he's, you know, he's just, it's like he's telling his kid. And he went on to explain that with our kids, we need to let our kids sure. fail. We need to let our kids do things that are dangerous so they know where the boundaries sure. are, or they never find the boundaries. And in today's world, we are so focused on safety that we never let kids, especially kids, mm-hmm. find those boundaries. It's so important. He mentioned that his son, a lot of times, you know, he'll want to jump off of something, for example. And he'll look at his dad and say, Dad, can I jump off of here? He'll ask for permission. And his dad, you know, he'll look at it. And if he knows maybe he could get hurt, but probably not that. But he'll say, go for it. That's so healthy. Mm. And we are missing that today. And we need to do more of that.
There's a story. I love this story. It's kind of the same story. But because that's the kind of parent I am. You know, it's going to happen. Roll with it. But
it's better to happen while you're there and watching.
Yeah. Years ago, when we were at our other house, you know, we lived in a neighborhood with six houses and we knew all the parents. We kind of, we know what personalities they are, but sometimes things happen and you think, this could test that. Well, one of the boys next door was in our yard and Louie, our little weenie dog / beagle, who's completely harmless, he doesn't really like kids. He doesn't take too kindly with being grabbed and groped. And so one of the boys was on the ground. One of the boys from across the street was on the ground. Louie bit him right in the face. And of course, Holly starts going into panic mode. Like, oh no, what is, I'm not going to say the lady's name. What is she going to do? And I was kind of wondering, you know, okay, that's probably. And when the mom came over, you know, he was bleeding on his face, and I think Holly was explaining what happened. And I will never forget what this mom said. It was the most awesome statement that I've ever seen. She looked at her son. She said, why did you have your face so close to that dog? Instead of, because, you know, society today would lash out at us, right. the owner of the dog.
Yep.
Instead of putting the responsibility probably where it should be, which is, he was grabbing Louie, had his face. I mean, if you get bit by a weenie dog, it's probably not the weenie dog's fault.
That's a good point.
Especially if you get bit in the face.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, the point is failure is the best teacher many times.
Well, and the other thing about it.
If we let it.
Yes.
We've got to let it.
Well, the other thing about this story is we act like we're taking risk out of everything, but you cannot take... For example, driving. Mm-hmm. You take a risk when you get in your car. Sure. And when I drove here, I took a risk because it is possible people die in car wrecks mm-hmm. every day. Mm-hmm. But we've decided to accept that risk because we have things we want to get done. And we completely, I remember there was a guy that I knew that he was afraid to drive over bridges or on an interstate. Mm. And so he tried to avoid bridges and interstates at all costs when he drove. And he rarely went outside of Dalton because he was afraid to drive in these places. Mm. And we look at that and we go, that's irrational. And it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is. But that was his issue. But we do that same thing with so many things these days, and we need to quit doing it. We need to realize that it is good to intentionally take risks from time to time. It's good to go out there and put yourself out there and try something that you don't think you can do. You mentioned talking about, I think in your devotion, you were talking about intentionally doing things where you know you're going to fail. Mm-hmm. You're going to have, there's a 50% chance you're going to fail, and mm-hmm. you do those things anyway. Mm-hmm. That's good. It's good, and it's healthy, and it's good for us.
Yeah, we need to take the phones from the kids and let them eat a little dirt every now and then.
That's right. Have you always wanted to read through the entire Bible but never found the time to do it? Well, let me do it for you. Sign up for the self-paced Bible in a Year challenge and start listening today. Every day, I read a few chapters from the Bible and give you helpful tips and encouraging quotes. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for? Every week I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. Well, this week, longevity. Runners on average live longer than non-runners, period. That's full stop, end of story. Not only that, but runners' lives in general are more full or a higher quality of life than non-runners as well. And that's pretty awesome. And I bet, I haven't seen the study on walking specifically, but I bet the same thing applies to walkers, absolutely. I'm sure. So if you want to live longer, start running, start walking today, and you're going to live longer. So this comes from Euro News. I thought this was an interesting article, and it says, can AI detect doping in sports? Researchers are developing AI programs to make doping detection more effective, faster, and cheaper. How do these systems work? What challenges do their creators face? So there was this feature film that came out back in 2018. It was called Icarus. And the film was originally set out to investigate doping in cycling. Mm-hmm. Well, what they ended up uncovering was one of the biggest sports scandals in history when they found out that back in 2014 in the Sochi Winter Olympics, the Russians had convinced people to replace drug samples and to cheat, basically. And they won a bunch of gold medals because of it and everything. So they happened to uncover that just in their trying to find these things. Well, a lot of this doping stuff happens. It's happening today. We're catching people all the time, but it's got limitations. Mm-hmm. So what the AI does is it looks at, there's two different types of ways that they catch people cheating in drugs. One of those is what they call markers of exposure. That's the direct detection of, okay, you've got EPO in your system. Mm-hmm. That's one way. The other way is an indirect way. It's called markers of effect. And what that does is it says, okay, you've got this really irregular thing in your system that shows that probably at some point in time, the only way you'd be there is if you had done something wrong.
Kind of finding the anomalies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And those are two different ways to do it. And so athletes keep up with these athlete biological passports, and all of these drug tests are all entered into this system. And so what can AI do for that? Well, what AI can do is it can take all of this information, and whereas if you're testing thousands and thousands of athletes, how do you pay close enough attention to every single athlete and every single test that they've taken? Well, this AI can take all those thousands of data points for each athlete and put them all together and in an instant come up with an answer.
Sure.
And so they can detect things that they've never been able to detect before using AI. And it's a really cool thing because we need to get drugs out of sports. It would just period.
Sure.
And this is maybe a good way to do it. Now, they say that the athletes who are doing these, that the cheating, are using AI to figure out how to cheat. So it's a battle on both sides. And the problem is, of course, as they state in this article, is that on the side of trying to catch drug cheats, they have to play by the rules. The people on the other side are not playing by the rules. And right. That's always a hard thing to fight. He says doping is a dirty matter, but we have to fight it with clean hands. So that makes it hard. But we've talked a lot about the bad side of AI. So I thought I would talk about, well, what are some potential good sides of AI?
Yeah, I think for all the reasons we just talked about, I'm still standing behind my comment that I think AI is going to be the next big thing in advancements of running performance. I think we're trying to catch the cheaters with AI, but I think it's also going to be our next big advancement of, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it looks like, but I think the next big, whether it's the sub 2 hour marathon or the sub 20 for the women, or sub 4 for the women, I'm sorry, whatever it is, I think the next big thing where we sit back in our chairs, kind of like we did with running surfaces, kind of like we did with running shoes, the next big thing is going to be something to do with AI. Yeah. I don't know what it looks like, but I just have a feeling that's what it's going to
be. Yeah, it's a good point, because it can look at all that information and figure out the most efficient ways to get there.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of doomsdayers out there. I listened to a guy just a few weeks ago that said that there is a, in his estimation, he's very connected to the AI world, and he said there's a 90% chance that AI kills us all. That didn't sound good. Most people are a lot lower percentage than that. But, man, that's scary. Well, talking about AI, did you hear this story? There is a group out there. It's called the Velvet Sundown. And apparently, they were getting like over 1 million downloads on their songs. And nobody knew much about them. So people started to research about this group called the Velvet Sundown. And they found out it's all AI. They couldn't find out anything about the lead singer. And it's because there isn't, he didn't have a history. Because there is no history.
They start trying to book the Velvet Sundown.
Yeah. And it turns out it's all AI. And when you listen to it knowing it's AI, it sounds too sanitized. Mm-hmm. You can kind of tell. But at the same time, it's not bad. Mm-hmm. The music's not bad. That kind of music is not necessarily my thing, but it's not bad at all. If you like that kind of music, you probably enjoy it. So, Where is reality starting in nowadays? You just don't know.
It's crazy. Yeah, and the thing you can't do, you can't stick your head in the sand and try to act like it's not coming, because it's coming.
Yeah,
where we have to be good stewards is we need to take what we know is coming and figure out how to use it for good.
That's right.
Because there's plenty of people out there trying to figure out how to use it for bad. It's like when social media came out.
Yeah.
I was so dead against it. I'm not engaging in that. I'm not doing that. And it was Gay Coker, the early days of Run for God. And I wasn't doing it. And she said, you need to get with the times and get on this and allow it to help
said
grow
the ministry.
So the lady
who's 20 years older than you.
Yeah. Let it help grow the ministry. And, you know, the early days of Run for God, I contributed a lot of its growth to social media. So that was good.
Yeah.
And something that I saw that was just terrible and it was going to destroy humanity and we're all going to die from it. Same thing you're hearing with AI now. You know, I don't know what the future holds, but I know that we are to take everything at our disposal and use it to glorify God. And right now that includes AI.
That's right.
What that looks like for us in our ministry, I don't know right now, but I know we need to start looking into it.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, technology we're not going to get into the whole COVID thing and about whether or not churches should have been shut down or anything like that. But you think about how great technology was to help us in that moment.
Sure.
I mean, is it as good watching a service online as being there? Certainly not. But it's way better than nothing. And a lot of churches started live streaming stuff. And, you know, we get a fair amount of hits. You know, we got a very small church. Mm-hmm. We get a pretty fair amount of hits every week. People, there's one lady in particular that I know that never comes to church. She right. never comes there. But she's watching that live feed every week. Mm. And is that ideal? It's not ideal, but it's better than nothing.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of people don't like technology. I would argue there's more good than bad in it.
Yeah.
Our trivia question for this week is this. We're going to use how about a biblical question this week? We've never done anything other than a running related question. So I thought, well, you know what? Let's go a different direction and let's do a biblical question. So we all know that the Protestant Bible contains 66 books and most Catholic Bibles contain 73 books. But how many chapters are in the Bible? And I'll take I'll take either the Protestant number or the Catholic number, either one. How many chapters, total chapters, are in the Bible?
Hmm.
And if you know that, you can send it to dean@upward.org. And if you are a member of Run Club, then you will win $20 off in the store. So how many chapters are in the Bible? It'll be interesting to see how many answers I get to this one. Our motivational thought of the week comes from Patty Sue Plummer. She said, running teaches us that we are capable of so much more than we ever imagined.
Hmm.
Fact check, true. we learn through running that we're stronger, more resilient, and more determined than we think. And we talk about that all the time, and it's so true. And Patty Sue Plummer was ahead of her time because she said this way back in the 80s. So, wow. Pretty cool.
Hey, for everybody out there, if you are one of our Couch to Marathon people or you're wanting to be a Couch to Marathon person, September 30th, we're kicking off the nationwide Couch to Marathon, which will finish 54 weeks from then at the Cannonball Marathon in North Carolina. Now, man, I just lost my train of thought, Dean. Oh, the training plans are already up. You can go on and sign it. You got to be a member. So go to upwardrunning.com, join, and when you go to the training plans now and you click on marathon, you'll see the Couch to Marathon Cannonball, and actually the Couch to Marathon Big Beach, which starts in January, is already up. So you've got two opportunities. You got October, one starting in September 30th, and you've got one starting in January. So I know that's a big deal. I know that takes a lot of thought. You really got to think about that, pray about that. But those opportunities are on the app now, so you can sign up for those. So join us. It's going to be pretty cool. We've never done one other than a January start.
Yeah.
So we're doing one that starts in – we're going to do – like I said, we're going to do East Coast, Gulf Coast, and West Coast still has a question mark on it as to where and when and all the details of that. But
that'll East be Coast, a spring marathon.
Yeah. East Coast, Gulf Coast are already in the system. You can go sign up for those right now in the Upward Running app.
Very good. Hey, and also one other shout out. We have this other podcast.
Yeah.
That Claire and Travis.
Claire and Travis. Kinda Fast. I like the name.
Yeah, Kinda Fast. So check that one out as well. I think that one's on YouTube. Is it on podcast?
It's on podcast.
It is on podcast. Yeah, yeah. Podcast and YouTube, so check those guys out. There's this kind of focused on the new runner.
Right. But different bend from where we're at.
Yeah, but very cool information.
Sure.
So check that out. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.